And hello, this is Jo with the wonderful Sherry Shockey Pope. And I've asked Sherry to come along today to talk to us some more about mindset and how mindset is a really important foundation when you want to build a successful private practice. It's actually a really important foundation if you don't want to build a successful private practice as well, because mindset kind of sets the foundation for everything. Now, Sherry's had a lot of experience, both as a social worker and as a clinician and as a manager and a leader and a builder of all things awesome in private practice. She's got a lot of wisdom to share with us. And every time I talk to Sherry, I learn something new. No pressure here, Sherry. None at all. Okay. But I think you've got a lot to contribute to the community as a whole and to all clinicians. Doesn't matter what discipline you are, you have a lot to contribute. So we've got a few questions. They're fairly structured questions. We don't want this interview to go on forever. And when you and I get together, we can tend to talk about things and stuff a lot. So the questions are a guide. And as you go through, if there's more stuff you want to add, please feel free to do so. So I'm going to start with the first question.
Okay.
Who are you? Who do you serve? And what is it that you do to help your ideal clients?
Well, currently I own a group practice, and we started our group practice about 8 years ago when we decided we wanted to be the solution to some of the problems for mental health. Mm-hmm. My business partner and I were working for the county and CPS, Child Protective Services, and all these kids kept being wrongly diagnosed with RAD and reactive attachment disorder. And if you look at the statistics, it's very rare, but we had probably 100 kids that were classified as RAD. And so my business partner and I said, hey, we want to be part of the solution. We never meant to stay at the county this long. Let's set up a private practice. We were in the middle of a recession. Why not? Let's start a private practice. And we jumped in, and here we are.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So how long have you been doing this now?
We're working on our 9th year.
Wow.
And because it's a group practice, we're a little different than a sole proprietor.
Yeah.
We have people that are in different specialties. So we have we have everything basically but eating disorders, and we don't work with perpetrators.
Nice.
And everything else we have, we do. Someone does a little bit of something. My specialty is trauma. And attachment and post-traumatic stress, because, you know, I came out of the foster care system, not me personally, but that's where I worked.
Yeah.
And so that kind of is in my niche. I also do couples, because a lot of people don't like to work with couples. And so I do couples, but I don't do them as much as I do the trauma pieces of it.
Okay, cool. So one interesting thing that you mentioned, it's a little bit different having a group practice as to having a solo practice. How many of you are there in your group?
Well, when we first started, we had two. And then that first year, we ended up with three. And then we moved to a new building when we ran out of rooms. And then we had five. And then last year, when I came to the mastermind, we had eight. And today, as of today, we have 14.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, you must be doing something right. You keep growing.
Yes, yes.
And there was that very
expanding.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned, so would you mind sharing that figure around how many intakes your clinic is doing a month sort of on average?
This month, for the first 20 days, we did 65.
Wow.
And probably we're on track to do maybe 79, 80 of them probably by the end of the year, by the end of the
month. So what excites me about that is that's 80 people being helped. The revenue will follow, because my whole philosophy is if you do the work well and you love what you do, the revenue will follow. So you've been in private practice for 8 years. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Had you been exposed to private practice before then? Had you thought about it? Had you dabbled in it?
I was licensed in 2000, and I was still working for the county. And so I worked with a lot of mental health clients there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working in, it wasn't private practice, obviously, but I was working in the therapy field.
Right.
And I did that one day a week. And then I also then worked CPS. And I always meant to be a clinician. I got kind of sidetracked, and then we had kids, and then, I don't know, stuff happened, and you get used to that regular paycheck.
Yeah.
And then you go, this isn't very fun anymore. And I don't like all the rules and I'm getting in trouble. And, just those kinds of things. Here's your next stuff. So I thought, all right, maybe it's time. And then we really did want to help our community and we couldn't find good therapists. We thought, well, here we are. Let's make it happen.
Make it happen. So what do you absolutely love? So you've done quite a bit of non-private practice. So you've had your foot in that camp and you had your feet, you've done your time.
Yeah.
What do you love about private practice? What is it that private practice is able to give you that employment couldn't give you?
Well, I like to be the boss of me. I like making decisions quickly and efficiently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I created a lot of programs when I worked for the county. I actually got to do a lot of fun stuff when I worked there to help kids, but I wasn't able to do it all the time. And I always was pushing and fighting to get something done. In private practice, if I decide, I want to do a group or I want to do mental health outreach or I want to do, a co-parenting class, I can do it.
Yes.
I like that. I also like my surroundings. I can make my office how I like it to be. I can choose the colors. It fits me. I like the freedom. I mean, that's a two-edged sword because in regards to you could set your own schedule, but then you also are the one who is called when like the toilet breaks or like this past week, the door was left open, and so you're the one that's on the call for that. But on the flip side, I like to be in control of me, and so that's why it's fun.
Yeah, cool. So what frustrates you about private practice?
I think hiring folks that don't do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest for me, because everything else in private practice for me goes well. It's hiring people either to do staffing, like when they're staffing the phones or when they're doing intakes or even therapists, and they don't have the same work ethic that I have. And so I get disappointed because they don't do what I think they should be doing.
Yeah.
And then they call out 12 days out of 30. And I'm like, really? What's happening here? Or they lie. I had one woman that I just happened to see coming. She said she was at the office. She texted me and said, I'm at the office now. And then I was going someplace else in the city and I drove right past her. And she wasn't in the office. She was in the traffic still.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's what frustrates me the most.
And
getting people to do some of the work.
Yeah. I share your frustration. I love my team, but sometimes I just don't want team. It's just, and that's when my desire to be in control of everything kicks back in. It's like, that's it. I'm going back on my own where I don't have to deal with anybody. I don't have to create another training procedure. I don't have to proofread another freaking report. Or you do a lot of file audits. So I'm just like, oh man. but I'm guessing you've kept going for so long that the love of what you're doing far outweighs the frustration. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense.
We see 420 clients on average a month.
Wow.
That's a lot of, a lot of healing and lots of care. And I still see clients because I love it. I'm trying not to see quite as many. There's nothing better than to work with somebody who has some issues and that's your niche and they get better. There's nothing better than that.
Yes. They get better in your time frame and in their time frame, not because CPS has said you've got this amount of time to do these things an insurance company says that's it. You've got 6 sessions to heal 20 years of trauma. That might be just the Australian experience.
Oh no, no, we have that too. I've been pretty successful though at negotiating for longer times for some of my clients.
Yeah.
But it's not fun.
No, it's not fun. So why did you decide, because you're successful and you've got a good practice and you've been doing this a while and it's not like you're a new graduate, why did you decide to come and hang out with me in San Francisco last year at the Success Mindset Masterclass?
Well, one, it was you, and I like you. And I like what you do and what you stand for and the quality of your work. And so that was the number one, probably. And I wanted to move up my income level. Like I said, we started with like two of us and then we broke to three and now we were up to eight, but we were still kind of floundering a little bit. And I mean, when you have staff, you have to do policies and procedures and you have to figure out a way to bill. And there's, you know, even timesheets are weird. And so I wanted to move myself up. And, you know, there's a lot of difference between, you know, $100,000 and $900,000.
Yes.
And I wanted to be closer to that $900,000 mark.
Yeah.
But it takes a different mindset. It takes a different mindset than when you come in at the beginning. And I was thinking about that before our interview today. It's some of the things that scared me to do. They're just like, just do it. I mean, it's not a big deal. But then it was like, well, now what do I do? How do I go to the next level? I mean, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing that, but what else is there to do?
Yeah.
And we don't know what we don't know. And so for me, it was like, okay, I need to figure out someone who's doing it well and figure out how I can emulate or create something that's similar. So that was it. And I just like, the idea of being with the like-minded people, because all the people that were at the mastermind were all successful. Mm-hmm. And they were all at a certain level and they all wanted to get to a different level. They wanted to get to a higher level. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to take risks and they would spur each other on. Mm-hmm. And so, I wish it actually happened twice a year. You know, and I like to get together and have a group of people doing like a mastermind. But this, you know, this works well. And I think the interaction with the people there really, it makes it worthwhile because it's not just, I mean, yes, we're learning from you and we're learning from the experience, but we're also learning from each other. And, you know, people go, well, did you think about this? Oh, no, I didn't think about that. That's what I like.
Yeah, cool. And that was a really powerful experience, how ready everybody came to play.
Yeah.
It didn't. And I was, I guess I was a little bit, not overwhelmed, but in awe of how vulnerable people came. And I think that had a lot to do with the way it was set up beforehand, like the getting to know everybody for a month beforehand. So you kind of just didn't arrive to a room of strangers. You had some connection and it was easy to start going. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You brought four team members along with you, your business partner and two employees. On reflection, was that wise for your business?
I think it was because it was an investment in us. And I think it pushed, one, it made me a better leader because I understood my staff better.
Yeah.
And I was able to go, and this is what I do. And this is why I do that. And, I should like, because I can get really self-focused and go, okay, do this, blah, 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 blah. And then someone goes, did I do a good job? And I'm like, of course you did a good job. Well, everyone does a good job, you know. And I have to step back because that's not how other people view the world.
Yeah.
And so that helped me be a better leader. And so I think it was very helpful. Particularly for the new people. Yeah. Now, one of them that we did bring, she left, she got licensed and she left, but we're still in contact and we're still doing some collaborative work on some classes and stuff. So it wasn't a waste of investment with her. It just is a different kind of investment. We're bringing two more this time.
Yeah, I know. I'm still like, wow. And they're excited. So that's really cool. So it was the first time the event was run last year. And I guess, did you go with some expectations and were those expectations met?
I think the expectation I went with was that whatever we worked on it would be a high quality event, and that, yes, the expectations of that was met. I mean, I had already spent time with you, I mean, the year before. So I had kind of inside information about who you were and how you worked. So I could put my trust in you immediately because I already knew you a little bit. So I think I just knew that it would be a classy event. I knew that it would be put on well. I knew that it would be well organized and all that stuff, you know, logistics and everything went smoothly. And I'm kind of impressed. You're doing it from Australia and, you know, we're here.
Yeah, and I'm kind of impressed too because I had no idea we were in downtown, you know, girls, 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 boys, 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 and Joe's the prude and going, oh my God, where have I brought people to? Somebody's Uber didn't want to drop them off. That was hilarious, but we all handled it brilliantly. So that was,
yeah, cool. Yeah, and we have stories to talk about.
Yeah, we do. Very cool. All right. So one of the modules that we talked through at the masterclass, which is kind of foundational, is called Understanding You. I hope you remember it. Mm-hmm. So what did it mean for you to understand you before you came to the event? If I had said that to you 2 years ago, what would that have meant for you?
I think it's a journey. We never stay stagnant. And so for me, I was ready to take another leap, but I wasn't sure how. And then, you know, that fear comes in, not fear of, I can't do it, because that part of it is gone. That was like, you know, a few years ago. It's more about fear.
So 2000.
In regards to like, I know I'm going to make it, but I need to figure out, I don't like to make mistakes.
Yeah.
I don't want to waste money. Your lights just went out.
I know. Like, that's awesome. Keep going.
I don't want to waste time. I hate wasting time. And I don't want to waste my staff's time because that's money. So for me, it was sort of like drilled down. Okay, this is what you need to know as a leader. These are where you have deficits. Well, I actually didn't call them deficits. I think you called them places for development. Something like that.
Yeah, would not have used the word deficits.
Yeah. And these are how your people see you, and this is what they need from you. Because I want to be a motivator for them. I want them to do their best work, because then I'm doing my best work if I can motivate them to do their best work. And then financially, we all should be doing great.
Yes, exactly.
So I think it honed in on some of the things. At first, when I got the little EDIS thing, I'm like, that's not me. That can't be me. And then we talked about it. And it was like, oh, well, yeah, I guess that could be me.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, most of that's me. Not that one, but all these other ones are me.
Yeah. So. And like any behavioral analysis or psychometric tests, I personally don't think they're ever 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. And they're only ever as good as the people who are interpreting them. So it's a really useful tool. But there will be some things where you go, yeah, I'm not owning that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when I got my very first one done, I argued with the instructor and went, no, we're doing it again. And it came out exactly the same. And I had to eat humble pie and go, okay.
Because we don't often see how others perceive us.
Yes.
We project what we think we're projecting or what we want to project, but it's not always how they experience us.
No, that's right. And that's been a really powerful insight for me as well, understanding that, you know, I go fast, I speak fast, I talk fast, I change my mind a lot, and that unsettles people. I didn't know that. I was just like, come along, get with the program. What's wrong with you? Oi! So learning how to internalize some of that. That was powerful for me too. So what did you learn about yourself at the event? If you can come up with three things, what did you learn about yourself at the event that has been really helpful for you in the last 12 months?
To integrate my staff in decision-making, but I ultimately have to make the decision. Mm-hmm. I think I wasn't abdicating my role, but I think I was trying to be so inclusive with everybody that we didn't make a decision sometimes on certain things because I wanted everybody's opinion.
Right.
So, you know, part of my pieces that needed to happen was that needed to start. I also took back my calendar, nice. And that was huge. Because I was letting my business run me more than I was running my business. Oh. And so it was sort of it was an aha moment. And I actually, you know, when I came, I was really tired. Yeah. And I just was like, okay, we're here. All right. You know, and then I got energized. And then it was like, okay, I needed to make some changes because this is not okay. I don't need to feel like my every fiber of my body is exhausted. So that was the second one. And I don't know, the third one was sort of work on projects, keep doing stuff. Because of my fact that I don't like to make mistakes and I don't like to waste money, I think I got, not necessarily permission, but it was more like, yeah, I've done that. And I had this problem. And then I had this problem. And so being around the other people who had similar problems, because when I make a mistake or when you make a mistake, it could be $20,000 or $40,000. Mm-hmm. And it goes in a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And then you're like, oh gosh, now what do I do? So
that's bake beans on toast for a month.
Yeah. That's very different than, oh, am I going to make the $900 rent?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's a different level. And so for me, it was like, first of all, talking numbers like that was like a little scary. So we all have these little money issue stuff. And I thought, oh, I worked out my money issues. I'm all cool. But we still have money issues that pop up, you know? And
yes,
then we're like, and then I was like, I can't know. I can't do this. I can't do my numbers that well. And then it was like, what am I afraid of? And I was like, let's just get it done. So that was four things. Sorry.
That's okay. I don't mind. Keep talking. It's great. I love the way that you've reflected that even at, you know, 8 years in massive team or fairly large team, mm-hmm. doing this for a while, dedicated and committed to learning and growth, that, you know, your money issues still come up. Money issues still come up. They do. They come up for me. It's not like, that's it, they are done. It's like it's like a new level or a new layer of the onions coming off and you're like, oh, damn it, I thought we left that 10 years ago, but here it is again.
Yeah.
I find it hilarious. So it's easy for me to go and commit to $20,000 worth of training, but I won't catch a cab from Melbourne airport into Melbourne CBD. It's like, what the hell? It's just, where did that come from?
Yeah,
that was a fun night. Okay, so what has been the biggest change for you in the last 12 months?
Besides adding staff, creating my program to help coach and help new business owners learn from my mistakes.
Great. That's cool. And what's it called?
Therapy Practice in a Box.
Yes.
And it has, it takes you basically from graduate school to laying the foundation and, then I've done some coaching in addition on that and helping people walk through that fear and giving them checklists and say, here, follow this checklist. Click, click, you can do this. And then I follow up occasionally with an email from them and, you know, do a little nice little kicking of their tushy. And then they respond like they've opened their practice and they've done this and they've done that. And,
yeah. That's pretty powerful.
So yeah, so creating a product to launch. Where'd you go?
I'm here. Did I go somewhere?
There we go.
Oh, I know I'm in the dark, but I really haven't gone anywhere.
So that took a little bit. And I mean, it took me a while to write the book. And I wrote a book. I didn't tell you that. I wrote a book. It goes with this whole program. And it took me a while because I'd never done this before. So I was like, how do you do this? And how do you do that? And how do you make it look like everything's so nice and seamless? And you don't. You just keep doing it. You just keep doing it. Like my very first sale, she was referred to somebody by somebody I know. And I didn't know her personally, but she sent me the email and said, I love your process and everything, but I can't download the book. It won't come. I keep trying and it keeps saying that it's not attached. I'm like, what do you mean it's not attached? And I'm like, I'll fix it. Hang on. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm in the back end of my website. And it's like, oh, there was a button that basically needed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I fixed that. But it was like, that was my very first sale, was a mistake.
Yeah. But it wasn't. She kept, did she ask for a refund?
No.
No. So yeah, I'm not going to, yeah. Technology works awesome when it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my philosophy. Yeah, okay. That's great. I am incredibly proud of that product and I love talking about it. I think it's an incredible, valuable tool for clinicians of any discipline. Like I've told you, I'm sending OTs to you and speeches to you. I know it's not, that's not its direct target, but I just, mm-hmm. there's nothing out there that is that thorough and systematized and helps break down that fear, and that you're not the only clinician that's scared of getting it wrong. Good grief, we deal with people's lives every single freaking day. If we get it wrong, there are consequences. So no wonder we take that into practice building. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So the final question for our interview this morning is, what is the number one thing that you think everyone who is in private practice, regardless of their discipline, needs to know?
I think the basic thing is that they could do it.
Nice.
That it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
But one foot in front of the other. And when you start getting in the weeds and you don't know where else to go, you hire a coach. Because we, you know, again, we don't know what we don't know. And if this is your passion, if this is something that you really want to do with your life, then you can't just let it go when it gets hard. You have to figure a way around that obstacle. You can't just go, oh, I can't do it. Sorry. I'll go back to working at an agency. It's about, okay, I can't do this. I need to call somebody to figure X and X and X out. And you just do it and get started. And it's not going to be perfect. And you have to be okay with that.
Nice. I'm going to leave it there. That's brilliant. So for the people watching or listening to this, if it's not perfect, that's okay.
Yeah.
So that's really powerful, Sherry. Thank you so much for sharing with me today and sharing with the people who are going to watch this recording or listen to the recording, because it should go out as an audio as well. Just so everybody knows, I'm going to put a link to Sherry's therapy practice in a box resource for us to be able to access. There'll also be some more information about the Success Mindset Masterclass that's happening in San Francisco in September 2017. And I want to say a massive thank you again. And I'm going to go and work out how I get more light in this room. Thanks again, Sherry.